Well, as you heard last week, or maybe it was a couple weeks ago, because I don't know when I'm going to play this, Tiger Reel has rejoined the RSC to do our performances of the complete works of William Shakespeare abridged here in Doha, Qatar. And when Tiger's not acting with the reduced Shakespeare company, he's doing a lot of directing. And in fact, he just directed recently for the Houston Shakespeare Company that problematic Shakespearean comedy, Merchant of Venice. And I can think of no better place than here in a Muslim country to talk about the Merchant of Venice.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or tablet or phone. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast number 486, Merchant of Venice. We've talked about The Merchant of Venice on the podcast before, most recently with the Backroom Shakespeare Project. We've also talked to author Christopher Moore about his comic novel The Serpent of Venice, which combines Shakespeare's play with the plot of Othello, the character of the fool from King Lear, and a sea serpent. But when Tiger Reel and I were recently in Qatar performing the complete works of William Shakespeare abridged with Dan Saske, I discovered Tiger had recently directed several productions of Merchant and has spent time thinking about and struggling with it. So against an audio backdrop of live bouzouki music in a Greek restaurant in a Western hotel in a Muslim country, Tiger and I talked about this fascinating and difficult play.
Get the gig, the opportunity to direct Merchant of Venice, and why did you want to direct Merchant?
Well, my Obi-Wan Kenobi is a gentleman by the name of Jack Young. He used to be the artistic director of the Warehouse Theater in Greenville, South Carolina, which at the time was the only equity theater in South Carolina. I was part of a program there called the Journeyman Program, which is like an intern program for guys just for students just out of school, still looking for work, whatnot. Anyway, most of what I learned about Shakespeare, or what I retained about Shakespeare and acting and directing, was from Jack.
So he's your Obi-Wan in the sense that he taught you the ways of the Force, in this case Shakespeare.
Exactly. Yes. And so I moved to California, and he later went on to run the Houston Shakespeare Festival, as well as the graduate program at University of Houston, which very coincidentally was where I spent my first year of college.
Okay.
So he got a grant from the school to they give grants to professors there to go out and ply their trade, and in this case it would be for him to act. So he contacted me and said, "Hey, I got this money. What about me coming out to LA and doing something with you?" And I was like, "Oh, that sounds great. What would you like to do?" And he suggested things like Moon for the Misbegotten or King Lear, even.
Wow.
And I was like, "Well." And I just, I sat and I thought about it, and I was like, "What? You'd make a great Shylock. Why not Merchant of Venice? And we have the Hollywood Fringe Festival in LA." And the only requirement, really, other than being able to book a space, is it has to be 90 minutes, no intermission. Okay. Or less than 90 minutes, no intermission. And Jack is one of the... he's very good at reducing Shakespeare. he's one of the best. And he came up with a cut, and I sort of put in the stylistic conceptual flourishes. And we put it up at the Fringe Festival, and we sold it out.
Right.
And we got some of the best reviews I've ever gotten for a show. Just people loved it, thought it was a really interesting and dynamic take on it. And then a theater company in Walla Walla, Washington, called Shakespeare Walla Walla, became interested in it and brought us up there to do it.
Cool.
And then eventually Jack said, "Well, I'm running Houston Shakespeare Festival now, so why don't we come do it at Houston Shakespeare Festival?" So that's...
And was it still the same 90-minute version when you did it in Houston?
More or less. We added a few, couple things back in.
So you said it was people loved the take. Yeah. What was the take? This is a kind of famously problematic play, and I did a production of it last summer with the Backroom Shakespeare Project. So I feel like I'm slightly more knowledgeable about it than I was since I put it on its feet. So what was your take?
Well, basically it. I felt like that the play is problematic only in the sense that it's one of those that just doesn't fit. It's supposed to be a comedy, and you know it's the ending that's problematic. It's just all horrible people.
Right.
There isn't a good person in the play for the most part.
And nobody cares about Act Five.
And nobody cares about Act Five. It's this horrible, and it's watching horrible people laugh and have a big great time after ruining a man's life
and being enormously hypocritical.
Absolutely.
Shylock is the least evil. Well, he's not the least evil, but he's equally as repugnant as everybody in the play.
Absolutely. So I really think that kind of actually makes it a very modern play. Yeah. You know, like Breaking Bad or Mad Men or something like that, uh-huh. where, you know, you have people that are morally questionable. They're not heroes in any real sense of the word. And sometimes they're doing despicable things. Probably for understandable reasons.
Right.
Shylock does some is doing a despicable thing, but my God, he has been put under the worst circumstances.
Not only the persecution and the prejudice of his day, but his daughter's marrying out.
Exactly, they steal his daughter away.
But does she? She's not kidnapped. She kind of goes.
Oh no,
she's willing. Well, in our take, she has a slow realization and. After running away, that maybe perhaps she has not done the right thing.
Right.
That's the basic sort of core concept is that it's a modern play, still has very raw nerves, raw values that still bother and affect people.
And Shylock makes meth in the desert.
And throws a pizza up on a roof. But as I am wont to do, I like to also like remember that it is a comedy, and there are things that, and so it was set in modern days, made the Venetians more or less New York Stock Exchange, very Wolf of Wall Street, just cads that are swimming in money, and then we made the stuff that goes on in Belmont with Portia, Nerissa, and the game with the suitors having to choose one of three caskets into this bachelorette reality show.
Oh, interesting.
And so we had these two different styles going on. You had this very almost like rock and roll kind of fast-paced Scorsese energy going on in Venice. Uh-huh. And then in Belmont, it was very stylized to look, feel, and behave like it's a game show.
Interesting.
We had lovely attendants bringing out the caskets, which were the suitcases from Deal or No Deal,
right.
That kind of thing.
Oh, cool.
And so we found that was a good way to get to the comedy. The suitor was basically Kanye West, the Prince of Morocco.
Right.
The Prince of Aragon was basically Justin Bieber. It's sort of hapless guys that can't quite get it. And Nerissa was the hostess of the whole thing. And it got laughs. But without sacrificing the actual underpinnings of what makes it difficult to watch and the actual heart of the play and Shylock's dilemma.
Yeah. Yeah. Is Shylock funny? Is Shylock able to be funny?
I think in the beginning he is. All the lines about pirates and we kind of set that up that Antonio and Bassanio are these guys, you know, speed merchants. They want stuff done now, and they're trying to make this deal with Shylock, and they have their iPads and their cell phones, and they can figure stuff out like that. Yeah. Shylock pulls out a pen and a pencil and a notepad and is slowly doing that. So that, you know, that adds both the frustration, the difference between the two worlds.
Yeah.
Shylock's sort of. not being a part of their world and being excommunicated from it, but also, you know, it can be funny to have this kind of, not doddering old man, but the somebody that just is completely out of sync with the rest of the world. I think that helps because it gives him a humanity. It gives him makes him a person rather than just a plot device or somebody that's already just raging at the thing. And we also
set, or a victim or a symbol.
Exactly. Yeah. And we also set up that the whole and I think we may have stole this from somebody else, the whole pound of flesh deal, he kind of tosses it off. He's sort of saying he would rather have this deal work and perhaps mend the bridge between him and Antonio.
Yeah.
Perhaps than instead of it being like this pound of flesh. So it's like, we'll do this. And if you default on the loan, give me a pound of flesh. Whatever.
Yeah, right.
Whatever.
Like that's gonna happen.
Yeah, and you know, just as a just as a sign of goodwill. And it's in the lines too. He says, look, as a sign of goodwill, I'm gonna ask you for this totally thing that I have no intention of ever asking.
And how could I possibly collect?
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And it's only after he defaults and Jessica is gone and the humiliation he continues to have at the hands of the Venetians that he's like, okay, fine.
Okay.
The letter of my bond.
Yes.
Yeah.
I got it. I got the seal on it right here. It looks like it's been approved.
Yeah.
Guess what, sucker? Yeah.
Hi, I'm Deborah Zane, casting director for Oceans 11, 12, 13, and Dreamgirls, and you're listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast.
Where can you RSC the RSC? This week, you can see us rehearsing in the Chicago area if you come over to my basement. Next week, you can see us rehearsing at the Folger Theater in D.C. And then in 2 weeks, on April 21st, you can see us perform the world RSC premiere of William Shakespeare's long-lost first play Abridged at the Folger Theater at the Folger Shakespeare Library in Washington, D.C. We'll be there until May 8th. Then we hit the road again, taking the complete history of comedy Abridged to Saratoga, Rancho Cucamonga, and Poway, California, Gillette, Wyoming, Reston, Virginia, and Somerville, New Jersey. And very, very soon, we hope to be able to tell you about something very exciting that will be happening this summer. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to ReducedShakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe and check out our touring page for specific box office venue and ticket information. And now back to my conversation with Tiger Reel in a Greek restaurant in Qatar, talking about The Merchant of Venice.
Well, this is fascinating because I love... you don't get to see that many productions of Merchant of Venice because everybody's so scared of it. And and the productions I have seen weigh so heavily on the tragic, important, controversial elements of the play, forgetting that Shakespeare intended it as a comedy.
Yeah.
Or at least, you know, the guys who put together the folio labeled it as a comedy. When we did it at Backroom Shakes, we very much leaned into all the comedy, all the racism, all the sexism, all the anti-Semitism, and it was definitely a parade of equals.
Mm-hmm.
Portia is another incredibly tricky role, it seems to me. Our Portia, an actress named Caitlin Costello, brought so much charm and personal wit and fun to it. You really liked her.
Mm-hmm.
Which is tricky with Portia, because I'm not sure she's written to be all that likable. And then she gives that famous speech, "The quality of mercy is not strained," and she follows it immediately by lacking so much mercy, and like she didn't even listen to her, you know, "Do as I say, but not as I do."
Right.
It's a very tough role. How was your Portia? Did you find that similarly challenging?
Oh, she's dynamite. She's a dynamite actress. And because we had the conceit of the reality show, we kind of created her and she's supposed to be this heiress. That, you know, we leaned into the Kardashian idea of this.
Okay. And
so then when we get to her and Nerissa portraying the lawyers in the courtroom scene, they start off as more of a lark. They don't know quite what they're getting into.
Right.
I had thought about like them bringing a cameraman along with them, so that this is going to be like a punked episode or something.
Nice.
But the way we kind of set them, the way I think it worked well with us is, she goes in this not really knowing what she's getting into. She gets there and almost and sees, first of all, that the entire town has gone, you know, the courtroom scene, the way we set it up, was just a seething pot of hatred.
Right.
And there's Shylock just not giving an inch, and she's bitten off more than she can chew.
Yeah.
So she tries to appeal to Shylock's sense of mercy.
Okay.
And it fails, and then just by luck, actually, we had Narissa find the piece in a law book and give it to her. So,
oh, very good.
So we
kind of dumb show.
While it's going on, while this other stuff, she's sitting down portraying the clerk, and so it was more about them thinking on their feet and trying to get them. They got themselves into this situation, trying to get, and plus also trying to save Antonio's life because she loves Pisanio. And then when we got to the final scene, it's now Portia has her own talk show like Oprah or Jerry Springer. The lottery was such a success, and so now she's a full fledged reality star, like Kourtney Kardashian gets her own show or whatever. So,
right.
And so it was it, so. The final, everything with the rings and everything was played as this Jerry Springer kind of, chair throwing match.
That's kind of genius, because it's hard to top the courtroom scene. Mm-hmm. So you come back to the rings business, and if you give it all that energy, you might just pull it off. It sounds like.
I think we did, because I think we were able to get the laughs that are required to make that scene work, mm-hmm. but also again not try to go, hey, everything's okay, these are everybody's happy, these are great people. Right. They're still shallow, sniping and playing tricks on each other.
Well, and that's interesting you say that, because it's really not, there are so many tonal shifts in this play, and really the characters aren't that much more sophisticated than the ones in Comedy of Errors.
Absolutely.
And so to play them as reality stars or whatever seems like a perfectly legitimate gloss to put on these characters. Like, why, in a realistic play, which I've seen so many productions ask you to take this realistically, why would the Duke accept the credentials of this lawyer in disguise who's clearly a woman? I mean, it's just, it makes no sense.
Yeah. In order to try to help smooth that over in a modern context, we try to make the whole thing just like this. The town itself is really on the, like, there's going to be a riot any second now, that everything is just so on edge, so crazy, that the Duke is trying anything to try to keep the populace from ripping each other apart or ripping Shylock apart.
So you've directed Merchant now three times. Do you feel like you've cracked it? Do you feel like you're ready to move on? Do you feel like you want one more shot at it?
I could take another shot at it. I like the play a lot more now than I used to. I actually never really had much of a love for it because, it's hard to like these people.
Right.
I think just like you can sort of root for Walter White or Richard III, honestly, you can root for Shylock.
Sure.
I think
absolutely you can.
You can root for Bassanio,
uh-huh.
Antonio, maybe even too. We had an African American man playing Antonio and Bassanio in Houston, so you also had that kind of underpinning of the communities of African Americans and the Jewish communities having this weird tension towards each other. That was never in any other production because we always had a white guy playing those two parts.
Right.
So it's kind of interesting to try to do the same play and find what, you make one casting choice and it kind of shifts things just a little bit.
Yeah, that's the fun part of casting.
Yeah, and I lucked out because Jack Young was in all three productions was just a tremendous Shylock, and if you got a good Shylock, that's one quarter of the battle.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Send us your thoughts about Merchant of Venice via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also engage with us and other fans on Facebook or Twitter. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. Thanks, as always, to webmaster Matt Rippey, disgraced moneylender Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and GarageBand. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Sally Delbridge. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to casting director Debbie Zane. And finally, thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 486 1458ths of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.
So much less.